This is HPR episode 2611 entitled HPR Community News for July 2018 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 84 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is HPR volunteers talk about shows released and comments posted in July 2018.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. This is Community News for July 2018. Joining me tonight is...
Hi there, Dave Morris here as usual.
Hi Dave, how are you?
I'm good.
I guess we need to do the standard, we're having a heatwave here in Europe, all the windows are open and there's going to be a lot of noise around. So.
yes, you beat me to it. There's a flock of seagulls outside my house, so if you hear strange noises, it's them.
Fairly enough, my kids are outside. So, alrighty. So this is the Community News Show, which for anyone joining this month, and there may be people joining this month following the review that's just been done. Hacker Public Radio is a community podcast. Dave, do you want to give an explanation as to what a community podcast is?
Well, it's a podcast where episodes are produced on a regular basis every weekday, and they are contributed by the community. And when you can contribute something, you become a host. And we hope you will then continue to do more.
And who exactly is the community, Dave?
Well, the community is hackers, where hacking is the old sense, the original sense, meaning people who like to modify things to make them work better and generally improve them, rather than the derogatory term that's used in the media these days. And we welcome hackers to come and contribute and to aim for those like themselves, fellow hackers. But really, the range of things that you can talk about on HPR is huge.
Yes, limited by your own imagination. And if you are put off by the fact that you don't think yourself to be a hacker, the qualifications are... actually, just look up my ironing board show and ask yourself, can I do better than that? So, there we go.
Yes. Good. That's a good yardstick, I think.
I'm lowering the bar, so you don't have to. So, it was pleasant. Do you want to talk about that review that was done, Dave?
Yes. I hadn't got it on the agenda or anything for today because I'd only seen it a few hours ago. There's a review that is covering the top 25 podcasts with Linux emphasis. And the site, I don't have in front of me, do you recall what the site is called? We can make sure it's in the show notes afterwards.
But, I do. I have it in the, if you go to the HPR website and you go to the about page, about.php, and in the press, I've added it there. It's the Linux, it's part of the Linux Links site, linuxlinks.com. And it's a review of Hacker Public Radio podcast from the hacker community. So we came out
21st, I think.
Yeah. And the verdict is, this is definitely the hardest podcast to give a reliable rating. Sampling 50 shows is a bit like visiting GitHub and picking 15 random repositories. There's no quality control. There are some gems, but there's content which is uninteresting or, frankly, pure garbage. See my ironing board show. That's much how Hacker Public Radio works. Shows from Clatu, bash scripting from Dave Morris, and many others are worth a listen for Linux enthusiasts. If you're not sure where to start, check out their in-depth series section, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's not bad at all, I think.
Tough, but fair.
Yeah. There's some truth in it. There is occasionally stuff which is maybe not the best, but I'm not sure I'd call it garbage necessarily. But
thanks, Steve.
But still, yes. There's a variety of qualities.
I think the 3-hour snoring session would even be that one was tough. No, that one was
yes.
Intended to be so, I believe.
Yes, I think there was a certain jokiness to that one.
Indeed. Anyway, the Hacker Public Radio, if you don't know what show to pick, then pick this one. And we run down through a list of all the shows that have been on the network in the last month or so. And some people, even regular people, hosts on the network themselves, use that as a way to filter out, go back, and make sure that they didn't miss anything. We, of course, listen to all the episodes because they're all... I've yet to come across a show that was not in some interest to me on some level.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yes, indeed. It's there's always some element of it, or it's somebody you know, or it's you like to know a little bit about the circumstances of it, or whatever, even if the content is not the thing you would go for, you know, normally.
Exactly. So, if you do decide to do a show, if you've been thinking about podcasting and you're obviously, if you're coming via the review on Linux Links, then you could yourself become a podcaster by simply recording a show about your technical background. That's a fairly common introductory show here on HPR. And then you can move on to what's in your toolkit. Also a good one. And then based on the feedback you get from those, you will get a big long list from me, Dave, about interesting shows that I would like to hear about.
Yes,
so that's a good way to start. So without further ado, let's go back to show 2586. And that was the previous community news show for last month.
But before you do that, we often look to see if we've had any new hosts.
Well, we haven't had new hosts in a while, Dave.
We have not had new hosts for some considerable time, but this particular month we have. So Philip has joined us, and we'll be hearing about his show in a little while. So
welcome on board. Thank you for coming on board. And I had to add Philip directly to the database because the CMS is broken. So.
Oh, yes. We need to work on that one, I think.
Yeah. Let's write that down for any other business. Is he going to annoy Dave that I didn't tell you about that for the other business section? Okay, so the community news show for last month, there were no comments. So the following day, we had 2587, which was cleaning out your digital gutters, which was Nightwise having a quick chat while cleaning out his gutters. And as his home, I thought this was a quite interesting take, and again one of these soundscape episodes. I thought,
yes, I enjoyed that. I hoped he wasn't going to do the thing where he pretends to fall off the ladder with that sickening scream, the thud. No, he didn't do that. Yes. Thank goodness.
Oh, the knives are out tonight, Dave. Now that you've been
nobody would do that. Nobody would do that.
Now that you've been reviewed, special mention in the review sections. Yeah. Put back your head down.
It was an interesting show. Yeah, let's leave it at that, shall we?
He's actually done one or two of these, so let's continue on. Just give me one second. So the next episode was from Tuku Toroto, I think.
I think it's how he likes to say it.
I went back and listened to his introduction, Dave, and that is the closest I could get you speak to say it.
Okay.
Anyway, miniature painting. This is a thing that I thought only existed in detective series where they find a broken miniature crushed in the corner, and then they're able to piece together who exactly did the murder.
Yeah, it's not a thing you hear about much these days. Imagine
people who are still doing it, but not making a big thing of it. But no, it's a fascinating thing. I've never had a particular desire to do it. I've never had the coordination to do this. And these are really intricate paintings.
Oh, yes.
I've seen some of his pictures on GNU Social, where he posts stuff about it. And I wish he'd put some into this this episode, because they're wonderful. They're beautiful. They're really, really cleverly done. So yeah, it was the show really lit up for me. I learned a lot from what he was saying.
And Clatou says, painting miniatures, I see amazing painted minis at my local hobby shop, and it always makes me want to get into creative dioramas and battlefields for games, but I don't feel like I have the time, money, or space for it. Thanks for letting me live vicariously through your hobby in this episode.
Very good point. Yes. DODD Dummy says, wonder no more. I've seen lots of miniatures in the past and wonder what goes on in the mind of those who paint them. Now I know. Thanks for the insight.
Great, isn't it?
Yeah, see? Yeah.
That's what I mean. Of interest hackers, and we didn't even know we'd be interested, Dave.
No. Well, one of the things that Turturto said about this was he uses a substance called gesso as a base, as a primer. And that's the thing you can get easily in art shops. And that resulted in a discussion with those who do a lot of model painting in this house, who have moved to using that as the base. This is handmade resin things that get made here. And I have asked them, would they please do an HPR on them, but I haven't managed to talk them into it yet.
Thank you. So the next day we had Saving Money, a response to Tattoo's personal finance series. Oh, and I love these response episodes. And Tattoo says, basically Tattoo has done a series on personal finance, and John gives some information about a 403B tax shelter bonds, US savings bonds, and guitar makers. So it was a very interesting episode, actually, from John. You get the more color about his background.
Yes, indeed.
It's actually quite amazing, because I'm having that whole I consider John to be a friend, having never met him, having no idea about his background or his policies or political views, you know. But I would always consider, yeah, I've got some friends in the US, and you know, if I'm ever passing, I would definitely drop in and visit him. Yet I know absolutely nothing about the man's background or essentially any of the people on the network who I consider my friends, and yet I know nothing about them. Strange that, I guess.
Yes, it's one of the modern strangenesses, isn't it? That you can know and communicate with people and not actually know them in the same sense that you would have done back in the day, like meeting somebody in the pub on a regular basis or something.
But then, on the other hand, you know, you could know more about somebody than their neighbors or their school friends, because they've never shared the fact that they're into model painting, or never shared the fact that they like antique fans, or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah,
so yeah,
true enough.
Anyway, Clatou says, thanks for the furthering this discussion. You make some really great points. Thanks for taking this discussion further. I've been interested in hearing about more people's experiences with saving money too, because I don't think there's just one right answer, or arguably the obligation or ability to save it all, if somebody wants to argue. The morality is interesting to me too, as it seems the only way to grow money requires either contributing to something one doesn't actually want to support, or taking advantages of others. Basically, this is one huge topic, and it's one that's getting more interesting the more I hear other people talk about it.
Yeah, good point. John Culp replies, the suburban option. Thanks for the comment, Clatou. I'd like to hear more discussion about this too, especially any arguments about whether saving money is really necessary or not. I have at least one colleague at work who rides his bike 4.5 miles each way and has for the last 20-some years. And he says that he doesn't save for retirement because his retirement plan is to get hit by a Suburban on the road. I think he's only half kidding.
I have said many times my retirement plan is to take somebody out and then just go to prison for a while, because you get, you know, free healthcare.
And, it's very cheap.
Yes, exactly. And, well, admittedly, in the Netherlands, where the prison system is, you know, is catered to rehabilitation and training and such.
Yes, there's many varieties of that of prison life around the world.
Indeed. And that would be a show in itself. I'd actually like to hear somebody who has prison experiences. That would be of interest to hackers, either having served some time or been involved in the prison system or works in the prison system.
Yeah, indeed.
It would be interesting. Yes, Tony Hughes, aka Tony H1102, blowing a PC power supply. Oh, yes. Who has not done that? That faint smell of ozone.
Never actually done that, but something similar, yes.
Yeah. Tattoo says, switches and mains. I've never really seen an on-off switch in an electrical circuit until I came to New Zealand. Here, every outlet has a dedicated power switch so that you can plug into a device and then power it on. It's really useful. In the USA, I think the only way to simulate this is to use power strips or something like a surge protector. Other times, just a splitter, which often have switches on them. So that's become a thing I've noticed in Ireland as well. A lot of them have switches.
Yeah. When I was a kid, the UK plug standard was different, or at least it was in older houses. And it was not uncommon to find sockets that had no power switch on. But the standards for the electrical standards for these things gone up really a long way since then, and it's quite strict in the UK compared to many other countries, I think. Possibly New Zealand and Canada are similar because of, you know, derived standards. But it makes damn good sense. pulling or pushing a plug into a socket, it's so easy to, you know, get short circuits or arcing, or it's a more arcing than anything else, I think.
Yeah.
That will really do damage to stuff.
Right. The following day, NY Bill, repairs my kit. The kit that keeps taking. This guy had me very worried for a while, sending me the bill for a new microscope. Just to give people the background for this, right? And my bill suggested that we get electronic kits. So I got this electronic kit, and during the New Year show, which is a 24-hour show, actually 26-hour show, which we split up, which Hunky splits up for us, thank you very much, and releases later on. It's a live event, so if you're around on New Year's, you can participate. So this is my first attempt at soldering, and I made a dog's dinner of it. I basically, I don't know if I blew or broke one of the legs of one of these.
I think you cooked it more than anything else.
Yeah.
Applied too much heat to it, I think.
Yeah. Anyways, in my defense, it's tiny.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I've been very wary of doing this because my eyesight is not so good these days. So yeah.
So I sent this over to my bill, which costs money, which costs like about 10 times more than the unit itself. And then he fixed it and sent it back, which costs more than the unit itself. And he bought a microscope as well. Oh yeah, I bought a soldering kit in the first place to do this, and lights and all sorts of stuff. So it was about 200 or 300 euros to get this. And I don't know how much he said his microscope was going to be.
I don't recall what he said. It wouldn't have been cheap, though.
It had me very scared. Very, very scared.
When I first saw his comments about this, thinking, wow, Ken's really generous. Thought, hang on. There's a bit of a wind-up going on here.
Man, I was very worried. But, no, very nice of him. He sent it back, he calibrated it, and I have it right here on my desk.
Wonderful. Oh,
cool stuff. Yeah. Cool stuff.
It was a fascinating show to see his analysis, or hear his analysis of what was going on and what he did to it and stuff. And his pictures as well were great.
Yeah, and also what I really wanted from this was to find out not so much what was wrong with it, but how he would go about troubleshooting an electronic issue. I know if it's a computer program, I know I put in some watch statements, and I know the procedure for debugging something like that. Or if it's a network issue, I know the procedure for debugging it. But I found that after I had this done, I had no clue where to start, and it was really nice to hear him troubleshooting the issue. And that's that was really cool. Also, it was very tough to have somebody to send off a thing knowing that you failed publicly on the 24-hour show, and now somebody's going to potentially embarrass you by identifying your fault. But on the other hand, I've had to tell myself, if you don't open yourself up to failure, then how can you ever improve.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I had a conversation with NYBIL several years ago. I'd got a circuit from the 2600 people. It was the badge that was used for one of the HOPE conferences. I bought one of their calendars, and I got one of them, but it was not populated. And I was saying to him, do you think I could actually rebuild this into the state that it would have been if I'd gone to the conference? And he said, don't even try, because it was all SMD stuff, you know, really tiny. There's a lot of things on it too. Don't even try. So I took his advice and didn't. But I'm intrigued to see that both you and he are delving into that side of things. So
yeah, but there's no choice really. Moral of the story: if you're buying a kit with, if you're new to soldering and you're buying a kit, try and avoid SMB components. It's very difficult to do now. Sometimes you can pay a little extra more. That's not an English sentence, is it? A little more.
A little more extra, perhaps.
Yeah. A little more. Dave, do a show about that.
later.
And you can get the kits with them already on and just to do the through-hole components. But I really enjoyed putting it together, and it was great to get it back. I now have the one that I bought complete, which is now on my project board, and I've got this one, and I've got a kit still in there with the SMB components on. The next new year, I'll put the other one together with the through-hole components. Anyway, enough about this. Following on, the next day was a tech talk with Alison. Very interesting. Cyclop and Alison, Uberlis Hacker Force. And all sorts of stuff about Ruby, OS design, and all sorts of cool things.
Yeah, it was most interesting to listen to her. I found these are two very bright people. It's great to hear them. And Alison is a Ruby developer, which is very impressive, and is thinking about operating systems in Ruby, I think is what she was saying. I'd like to hear more about that in the future.
I think if I walked into the room, the average IQ would lower considerably.
Well, same here. I feel the same way. it's really good to listen into that conversation. That was great.
Now, this one I'm going to butcher, as is my... how about you do this one, Dave? Thank you very much.
So this is Tuturto again. That's how I think it's said, but you might disagree. And he's talking about a game called De Bellis Antiquitatis.
Sounds about right. Yes, that's exactly what I would.
So, I'm not quite sure what that means. It sounds like it's sort of Latin or something.
It means
the
Wars of Antiquity.
Bellis, you'd think, would be something like beauty or something.
The Wars of Antiquity. Okay. Wikipedia can't be wrong.
right. So learn something every day. But yeah, so it's more painting of soldiers and things and talking about the game.
And the unofficial guide to DBA, which I thought was database administration. But
yeah.
There you go. Could have sworn there was a comment about this. Maybe it's on a further later episode.
I think they were all on the first, weren't they? And on the I don't recall there being one on this, but
okay.
Okay.
So the first show, newcomer, and what a topper! NMTUI, the Network Manager Terminal User Interface, by Philip. Welcome, Philip. Something I didn't actually expect to didn't know about. Great show, loved it.
Yeah, this is actually quite an interesting facility. It's I've actually found a YouTube thing about it, and it's one of these terminal based things so it uses terminal graphics and stuff to display the menus, and it looks really, really very, very good and easy thing to use.
Incursus stuff is actually
good. That's,
I was thinking of doing a show on NCDU, which was a tip from the Ubuntu UK podcast, who pipped us to the post for the number one best podcast, Dave.
yeah, I noticed that.
Congrats.
I also heard their talk about that and went looking for it and checked
it
out.
Excellent. Yeah. Absolutely excellent.
Yeah. Yes.
So actually, if you have any other recommendations for NCursus stuff, It will be cool because, you know, incursors and screen and, you know, old laptop or whatever, and you've got yourself a very powerful GUI.
You can do some quite smart things with it. I have used it. I think I wrote a menu. No, I mean, I wrote something for it. There was a menu system for our students that they could change their password on the mail server or the mail system. So I don't know why we decided to do it that way, but we put up a thing so you logged into the main university mail server and you could change your mail password in the days when we didn't have unified passwords. And it was pretty easy to do and worked remarkably well.
Yeah, cool. Love it. Klaatu said, nice first episode. Great episode. Loved your use case and the walkthrough of using the tool. Also, I tried NMTUI out for myself, and it's actually quite useful. Network configuration is such a bother, and it's so nice to have an easy button with these tools like these and still don't depend on Xorg, Wayland, or whatever. And
yeah,
Philip was responding to Klaatu's show in the first place, who did it prompted that discussion, prompted him to do the show.
Yeah, good stuff.
Doing exactly what you say on the tin. You hear something and you comment back. Tony, aka New Laptop Bargainman, Tony H1212, or aka I come on and taunt Ken with all these cheap laptops that I buy. God, he gets some good deals.
He does. He does. How does he manage this?
I don't understand.
Three laptops. And each one, he didn't say how much they cost, but he said they were under £160 each. So his house must be filled with laptops.
No, he said it would fetch. Even today, they fetch £106 in good order for the likes of eBay. So I don't know what he paid for them.
He did say something like, I didn't pay as much as that, or I paid less than that. So he definitely got some bargains there.
Cool. Yeah. And the following day, we had battling with English. Yes. Some people just can't let it go, Dave, can they? They just can't let it go. The then and the dan. I must say, I never had a problem with the then and the dan for one second.
It's surprising how many people confuse them, though. I don't know what it is. If it's the spell checkers that offer the wrong one. You know how annoying spell checking can be. But you'd have thought there would be enough knowledge of grammar in those things that it wouldn't offer you then when you needed dan. But it seems to be quite common.
Yeah, it's difficult with the context. I remember you were with me for that in FOSDEM, the first talk. 3 years ago now, on spell checking and the context of spell checking. That was difficult. Okay, Klaatu says, there's a lot of comments, so let's go through them. Great series. This is such a great series. I can honestly say that having spoken fairly poor English for my entire life, I hate English.
That was proper English, by the way.
Proper.
Just to get that right.
Fairly proper English, yes. That's an important statement. Yeah, thank you. Important difference is the word. Of all the languages poised to serve as a global language, there could not be one more undeserving than an amalgamation of German. Please, Klaatu, what the hell are you doing to me? All right, then an amalgamation of Germanic forced through a filter of Latin. It's inconsistent, confusing, overcomplex, and yet as insufficiency the free software struggle for a lack of abject term for free, as an example. I really wish a sensible, constructed language would be adopted in English's place. Anyway, nice series, although your efforts are surely in vain because English will never make sense.
I like that comment. That's a great one.
But English was never meant to make sense, Dave.
No.
I heard a In Our Time podcast about that. Well, did I mention that before?
I don't recall, no.
It was way back when I was living in the UK, actually. And they were saying that the language just developed because of the trade around London. And it was, you know, just a pidgin language that was used on shipping vessels. And then it just became into fashion that people started using it more widely. At the time, within English itself, there were a lot more dialects. There were a lot more dialects in Dutch and German and French. So with all the traders coming together around London, they used a lot and shared a lot of the words together. So
that sounds interesting. I don't recall.
Plausible anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one. Certainly, as a kid, I moved from London to Norfolk, and Norfolk was a very remote county way on the east side of England, which is, you know, it's 100 miles away from London. It's nothing, but it's a big distance in English terms. And the difference in the language totally threw me. People don't, they use different sentence structures. They use different words, and there's, you know, it's dialect really, but the differences are massive because it was an isolated place that stuck with a lot of ancient terms and some of the Norman French still there and so on and so forth. And that really threw me. And, you know, it's an indication of how weird English is that it's, you can go all over the place and find those sorts of differences in the local dialects. So, yeah, I must listen to that IoT thing, by the way. It sounds good.
I can find it. Okay, Dave Morris says,
you want me to do that one? Is English really so bad? There's no doubt, in my mind anyway, that English is weird and difficult, annoying at times, and illogical. Perhaps because I was a bad student at school in my teens, I've never properly understood the whole issue of grammar, parsing sentences, past participles, and all of that stuff. However, I've always had a fascination with words, their meanings, and their origins, and I think it's English that has led to that interest. Other languages also have their problems. I learned French at school and did a few years as an adult too. I never got to grips with the genders of nouns. Why is a table of the furniture variety feminine, for example? How is it possible to remember them all? I still enjoy attempting to speak French nevertheless. You point to the deficiencies of English with regard to the meaning of free. Absolutely. That's a shortcoming. However, many other languages have their own idiosyncrasies. I worked at a university with a campus in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Bahasa Melayu, the local language, is very different grammar compared to English. And there's a reference to a Wikipedia page about the grammar for some aspects of it. I remember having conversations with Malay speakers suggesting an English way of expressing a thing to be told that was pretty much impossible in their language. This led me to believe that English might be more subtle, but perhaps on the other hand, it's more suitable for circumlocution, evasion, and indirectness. At school, my French teacher was also an advocate of Esperanto. I wonder if that sort of language was what you had in mind instead of English. I don't know enough about its benefits to judge. Yes, I think it was. But I wonder if constructed language can really be as rich as a, quote, natural, evolved language, even with all its clutter and detritus. Thanks for your comments. They really got me thinking.
And I think I've already done an episode on the free software free thing, so you can look that up. Hipstar says, thank you so much. I'm pleased you responded with the... what was that? Ecumenical
etymological.
That's the bunny. That would be an ecumenical matter. Etymological, what Dave said. For some reason, knowing that kind of history really brings things alive for me. I am enjoying the series. Yes, me too. I hope that at a later date, there might be a connection to regular grammar and regular language. I've always been fascinated by the connection between Noam Chomsky's linguistic work and the simultaneous development of LISPs at MIT, both endeavors being obsessed with recursion. Oh, is that a show waiting to happen, Hipster?
Yeah, sounds like it. So do you want to do the next
I'll
one?
I'll do the next
I'll
one.
I'll do my own one, yeah.
BJB says, the ownership of apostrophe. I loved hearing about the ownership form of apostrophe. It really another example of contraction. Yeah, thanks for that, actually. That was very interesting. Just on a general, very interesting show.
Yes. I sort of vaguely knew that there was something like that behind it, but hadn't ever really dug deep enough to find it. And I was really pleased I had, because it sort of makes more sense. At least it's a good way to remember it, even if it's not 100% true. I think it is true, just in case.
Yes, and so don't forget people that language... Sorry, go on.
No, it's gone.
And don't forget, people, that language evolves, because last week I spent some considerable time in a back in time in a Middle Ages, and they were talking modern Dutch. And during this, we got to read some older Dutch and language does evolve over time. So yeah, the whole time traveler thing would all need to pretend that they're from a different, that they're a tourist from a different country. Ideally, if you're invading the world, what you would do is you would take the form of a human and you would pretend to be from another country, and you would be looking at your interactive communication device the whole time. So if you see anybody looking like that, you can know for sure that they're aliens.
I'm sure that works, absolutely. Next. So I said, in regard to hipsters' comments, I'm fascinated by etymology. I learned a lot of spelling and pronunciation by understanding word origins as a youngster, and spent a fair bit of time looking stuff up in the dictionary to find etymological information. I will try and share some of the historical context as I go, for certain. I studied what was being called comparative psychology.
What was that?
I don't know. It's just a hell of a big seagull, if that was what it was.
It sounded like somebody being murdered in the background.
Yeah.
It's murder!
It's hard to tell when you got headphones on what the hell that was. Anyway.
Police room was... arrived on the scene.
But... they say this is a quiet area. This is the sort of university ghetto, if you like, but still okay. subject to strange noises.
I studied what was being called comparative psychology at university, and this involved looking at some of Chomsky's work. I wouldn't say I was very familiar with it now, 40-plus years later, but I'm prepared to have another look. I expect these shows will become a series soon, and you will be very welcome to contribute to it. You are welcome to contribute now.
Ha ha, you see what he did there? See, we're professionals, we are.
Ah, yes. Had to play that particular card. And then I commented on BJB's comment saying, read the ownership apostrophe. Ha ha, I hadn't quite looked at it like that, but you are right. I like looking for logicality in language. Sometimes it's a vain search, as I'm sure Klaatu would say, but a fair bit seems to conform to somebody's idea of logic.
Yep.
Nobody disagreed, so I've got away with that.
No, I get you right. And that's what I trouble with most of my life, is somebody's idea of logic.
Yeah. It's a case of fitting your own brain to their view of it.
Yes, the following day, how to fix a remote control with buttons that don't work. I'm actually glad John did this. I did an episode about using an IR camera. Sorry, using a regular digital camera to see IR pulses from a remote control. And he also mentioned, and I mentioned it in the first show, that just because your remote control doesn't emit infrared for all of the buttons doesn't mean your remote control is broken. It could be emitting on a radio frequency. So, but two buttons, the volume one and the on-off button, will more or less be guaranteed to be infrared as well.
Cool.
But this is good, actually. He just took the whole thing apart, cleaned it, and put it back together again, which is nice.
Yeah, given that these things have a sort of rubber pad over a bunch of contacts, then that seems like pretty good idea, because a certain amount of muck will accumulate inside them, won't it?
Yeah, hipster again, how to fix a remote. Thanks for the podcast. I've run into the same problem. Once I cleaned my remote about 3 times, it was done. The gunk in the remote that gets into the circuit board is generally some kind of silicone lubricant or solvent. Apparently, the buttons pads have to be cooked after they've been made to get all the silicone gunk out, and most manufacturers don't bother any longer. They assume that you will only use the remote for a year or two before losing it, or you'll just buy a new one. The actual physical art of pressing the button pushes the silicone gunk out of the pad. And thanks for the guitar pick trick. Quite good as all.
Yeah. If you've got those in your house, that would be a great one. Otherwise, you have to go and buy all manner of spudges and strange devices for opening cases.
Yeah, I actually got a kit from Duel Extreme or somewhere like that, Banggood or somewhere. Really, really very useful kit.
I've got some of the iFixit stuff for doing
that. Similar to that.
Yeah, that's very good.
The following day, we had calculating planetary orbits in Haskell, and I got to tell you, I got Turo, who I'm butchering his name. I was, this was a toughie for me, largely because this. The only reason this some of this made sense is because I have done some shadow calculation work recently, and that made sense to me. But I liked it. I liked the show a lot.
Yeah, I'm so glad he did this. I discovered that I don't fully understand what he's talking about, either from the Haskell point of view, or I didn't completely follow the ways he was doing this. Though I'm sure if I spent enough time on it, I could get a little bit clearer. But Haskell is such a strange language, and it's something that I feel I ought to at least have some idea of. Does he say in this one suggest that you learn? No, he didn't mention it as a link in his in this particular one. But there's a site called Learn You a Haskell, which gives you an introduction to Haskell. I'm sure he's mentioned this at some in
some
context. Yeah, I think
he may have done in the past. Yeah.
But so I've started following that very very slowly. So it's a great example of this type of functional language, I believe.
It seems readable to me, just looking at it. But he's also got great links in the show notes, guys. So if you're following along with the show and found it a bit much, click on some of the links, and it really helped me understand what he was saying in the show.
Yeah, it was a brilliant show. It was really, really well done. And the links are so, so helpful.
And again, I think he is orbiting at a plane slightly higher than mine. So, you know, but that's what I'm doing here, Dave. I can't be the one who's, you know, Ken's got his brilliant show there, you know what I mean? I have to be the one to lower the bar. I'm taking this hit for you guys. Speaking of which,
well done.
The next day, fitting a 3.5mm adapter to a Bluetooth receiver, where I take a set of earphones and I make something that has the security team in the airport looking at me nervously as I walk around in it. But it's actually quite good because you can it functions as a phone receiver as well.
Yeah. Now it's a great idea. I like it very much. I think I would have used a bit more heat shrink than you did to hold it together. That would be my, and I'd probably wanted to 3D print the thing, but that's just me.
After recording the show, I thought to myself, this has got to be available somewhere on the internet. So I found one. I went to Amazon and found one for $10 total, you know, printed case and all the rest. So I might do a review of that.
Oh, that would be interesting. Yeah. It is an excellent thing. I haven't quite reached the point where I need such a thing. I'm not using my phone or any phone to listen to podcasts because I've got a stack of these MP3 players, as you well know, because I've gone on about it at great length. But yeah, the time will come.
Yeah, but mine do get a lot of punishment because I'm on, you know, my 3-hour commute and I'm jumping from here to there and putting on my rucksack and taking it off and throwing them in the corner and they get washed and all sorts. So there's a life cycle with mine. Did you like my show notes where the patent pending earbud left from your right?
Oh, yes. That's excellent stuff.
It's still working. And I bought the book Motherload by David Collins Rivera, a broken down gun book stuck in space. And what that has got to do with the earbuds is it's also available as an excellent audio podcast. Or actually, it's more like an audio theater production. So buy the book, listen to the podcast. Audiobook.
Yep, seconded by me, yes.
And comments from CM Hobbs. Great plan. Love the episode, Ken. Wish I'd have thought before I purchased this Teotronics TTBA0. I like my little device, but I prefer the DIY. And then he goes on to say, my Rockbox Sansa device is still alive, but my dad's bit the dust. I'm hoping mine keeps going, though I am often using my Android phone through this adapter these days. So actually, yeah, he's got a nice little, looks like a nice adapter. I want to live with this for a while and then just do a quick show sometime where short of shows on my experiences using Bluetooth and this as a way versus, you know, a Sansa clip. Anyway, moving on. This is boring people to death. And the following day was a special episode on 2600 Blue Rocks and Freaking, celebrating our history as hackers. And we go back to the old school Freak America show, playing episode 1. And episode 99 was the first mention of Hacker Public Radio. There you go.
Yeah, good stuff. Now, that it was a fascinating thing to hear. I've not listened to many of these. I think I might have listened to some of the later ones, but I hadn't never listened to number one of that particular show. And it's a very different world that
yeah,
they're describing.
It's a historically, if you're listening to podcasts, it is definitely worth your while going back and downloading them. There are only 100 episodes, so it's not that. If you're an avid podcast listener, it's definitely well worth going back because it's a different. Some things have changed so much, and some things remain exactly the same. And the whole and a lot of the hopes that they had, unfortunately, never came to fruition. You know, for the world being a better place, but you know, there you are. You know, and also you hear things like Facebook being introduced and Twitter starting up, and you know, stuff like that. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that your phone interfering there, Ken? Did you hear that?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
Okay. I don't think it was mine. Mine's away at the other side of the room.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Okay. No problem.
As we say here in Hacker Public Radio, any audio is better than no audio.
It happens. As audio tends to pick up the sort of phone connecting with base station noises, doesn't it? So do you want me to do the comment? Oh, sorry. Go on.
Yeah, no, far ahead. I was just going to distract you with a, did you know that they monitor the mains home and they can tell when audio and where audio was recorded? Did you know that?
Whoa. That's scary. That's scary. So like
every country has its own, in the power grid, it's 60 hertz, but you know, your physical power stations all over the place. So it changes slightly, goes faster and slower and up and down and stuff like that. And you can tell then at what time a recording was made, because you will always be able to get some sort of mains home from the background, regardless, even now on this recording. So there you go.
Goodness me. That's a horrible thought. This is me just in the process of saying no thank you very much to a smart meter being installed. They keep on pressing me to install the smart meter. Probably the time will come when I can't do it, but this is one of those that phones home every whenever it feels like it and reports your electricity usage, but it can monitor you as well. I think monitor a lot about you.
Yeah. Who was it? One of the interviews that we did was to, you know, more benign uses would be to check on old folks that would be less intrusive. You know, the coffee, you have a spike in the morning between 9:30 and, you know, 9 and 9:30, and it's the coffee maker going on, and you have a spike in water usage at 10 because, you know, the daily cycle is going through. So I could see that.
It's good in some respects, but mostly not. Anyway,
go on. Again, I'm distracting you, Dave. You want to get back to your dinner or whatever?
No, I'm good.
One of the, when I was interviewing the a FOSDEM, one of the guys was from an electrical company here in the Netherlands, and that's been imposed by the EU. And here in the Netherlands, the smart meters are common, you can't object to them, but you can vote that they don't be activated, that they're not activated. So we'll see how it goes.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to build a Faraday cage in my in the cupboard where the meter was going to go.
I'm going to do as well, Dave.
Seemed a little excessive, you know, all the wire netting and stuff in there. But just on the subject of things being monitored over power, did you see all the stuff about how some guy doing time testing across optical fiber across the world was detected strange changes in the signal, which were caused by an earthquake. So it's turning into a new way of detecting earthquakes across the globe by the effects they have on optical fiber under the sea. And it means you can monitor stuff where there are no geological, what you would call it, the things that monitor the
seismic,
seismometers is the word. Yes, God, those types of things.
That's
you can't
amazing.
Put them. You can't put them at the bottom of the Marianas Trench without a lot of difficulties, but you can run cables through it. So therefore, you can determine things about earthquakes all over the planet using this. I don't think it's reached that stage yet, but certainly it's something they're working on.
Excellent. I love that.
cool stuff.
Yes, so, that is cool stuff. That is stuff that is of interest to hackers, Dave.
It is, yes, yes. If only I knew more about it, I could do a show. But...
And the definition of hacker is somebody listening to Hacker Public Radio.
Indeed.
NY Bill says, ha, I won't be hearing this until tomorrow driving to work, but it's fitting that it happened to come out during the Hackers on Planet Earth conference. Hope. Yes, yes it is. Very cool, very cool.
Yes, yes. It. He and his wife, I think, go to Hope. And have learned how to do lock picking and other cool stuff.
Yeah.
So, yes, I'm jealous.
Yeah, exactly. Liverpool Maker Fest, an interview with Chris Dell. And this is Tony, who I would have loved to have gone to this as well. And those EduBlocks look really cool.
Yeah. EduBlocks is a thing where you can
like
do
Scratch.
An equivalent to Scratch, yeah, but in Python, isn't it? Yeah. Now, this sounded great. I followed those links and I was having a good look around. I think it said, is it on a PIC chip based circuit?
That's the money, yeah.
Which is nice and cheap.
Yeah, very much.
And you can use it for IoT applications, my notes say. So, very cool. Find out more.
Here's all the boxes for me, I must say. The hardware, the electronics, the Python. Yeah. HBR quick tips with operator throwing away shows. Throwing them away, Dave. What can we do?
Oh, dear.
Anyway, Spider Oak backups, deer trekking, and hiking. All three individually would have been three individually good shows, but no, fine. Choose to waste them in one show. But that whole Spider Oak backup thing, it's kind of, yeah, I've been considering the concept of, you know, whether you pay for one of these services or whether you buy a large disk yourself and add it to a pool. So that sort of thing I'm very interested in. Somebody out there has experience with what I'm trying to, you know, where I'm coming from. Either personal pool or more a shared BitTorrent type pool. Or not BitTorrent, but more like a Bitcoin-y type.
Yep. I see the need. Don't have anything like that. I just rely on local stuff, which is not entirely wise, but...
No, because what I have been doing is... what I've been considering is a Raspberry Pi. I think I've spoken about this before, and I've never really had... Because it takes so much time, actually, to do. Raspberry Pi... that you would buy with a default image and then ship you a drive, which you wouldn't be able to access, and then mount the encrypted partition over an SSH tunnel. So even though your data is stored in a remote hostile location, nothing can be retrieved from that data because you don't have access to any of the keys, and vice versa, then you ship yours to the remote location. That's kind of where I'm coming from.
Yeah. It was a thing that we used to do between the university I worked for and another university. We used to hold each other's backups, and I don't know that we went to enormous lengths to secure them. We did do that, but it was more of a sort of gentleman's agreement than anything else. Yeah.
Okay, some comments on this. Nick Burns from Hipster enjoyed the podcast. I find it to be very frustrating asking technical questions. Hold on, sorry, did I just jump?
You just jumped to 2603, I think.
So he gave a tip using a paper towel to remove a travel coffee mug seal stuff and a rant about, let me Google that for you.
Yeah, that was an interesting, not so much the seal removal, though, which I'm sure is great if you have one of those, but...
Yep.
The technical question business is quite a subject about people asking other people for help and advice and that type of thing, and how they should deal with it and how you should deal with it. That's a big subject and quite an interesting one.
And worthy of a show, I think, because I was thinking of replying to that. I have quite a bit to say about that, and then I was thinking of replying to it in the comments or replying here or doing a separate episode. So we'll see what happens. Hipster says, Nick Burns, enjoyed the podcast. I find it to be very frustrating asking technical questions because a lot of guys want to humiliate people who ask them questions, like Nick Burns. And I find that these guys often don't actually answer the question because they aren't listening. They're just listening until they hear a keyword and then they go into a rant.
Yeah, yeah. Nick Burns is a character in some American show
sort. Unfortunately not. Apparently, I didn't know who he was until I Wikipedia'd him. And he is a university professor, lecturer, and former American diplomat. He is currently blah, 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 blah.
Oh, I assumed he was like the bastard operator from hell or some such person.
No.
This is a real person. Okay. Obviously acting a part. B-O-F-H. Yes. Anyway, DODD Dummy says, related to humiliation, there are lots of issues with how we ask and answer questions, but related to humiliation specifically, what makes me really sad is when someone tells me they don't want to ask a question because the person or people they'll be asking humiliate them. One of the reasons I will not publish the asker's name if they don't want me to. This seems like a weak person, but I've had managers tell me that they look down on people who don't know things. So I understand the hesitation to ask questions in an unfriendly environment. There's a lot to learn, and we might all be better off if we realize a person has skills, maybe not in the same area you do.
Yes.
Good point.
Very. I'm definitely on that bandwagon. Thank you.
I have to admit that there was a tendency in my early days of working in IT to be a bit arrogant in that respect, but I soon discovered that was a really, really stupid and immature thing to do, and I never did it again. But in fact, I went the opposite direction and tried to be that person who could be approached to ask whatever question you wanted, because I quite enjoyed teaching, and it was a good teaching opportunity.
I find it very important to, when I was interviewing people, I would always, regardless of the quality of the candidate, I would always push the questions, keep pushing to the point where they didn't know the answer. They couldn't, and in some cases, there were people so qualified that they couldn't possibly know the answer. So I asked them something specific about how you would interact in our company, so they definitely couldn't answer the question. And it was just to get to them to the point where they couldn't possibly know the answer and how they would then approach the embarrassment of not knowing the answer to the question. And it's very simple. I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer, but I imagine it would be this. And that's what I was looking for. And I tell you, some very qualified candidates got eliminated because they simply could not ask. They could not just admit that they didn't know. And some entry-level candidates were going, well, I don't know, but this is what I guess. And they got the guess completely wrong. But their logic, at least, was these people are interested in knowing how to solve this issue.
Yes, yes. Oh, yes.
And I have that issue now where you just cannot possibly know everything. It's just silly to expect to know everything. It's just mind-boggling. And I know people who are struggling with the fact that they're finding it very difficult to say, I don't know, and I need help. And they're stuck with that. It's a very, very difficult thing to get out of. But yeah, just like with me with this NY Bill thing, it's tough. It is a hard thing to say, I don't know. But to be honest, if a manager ever said to me, yeah, you don't know something, yeah, big deal. Now I can find 50 things you don't know about. Yeah, okay.
yes, indeed. No, an environment that makes you feel small because you don't know an answer, when you're probably there, you've been hired, certainly you have acquired the skills which allow you to find out, is an extremely toxic environment.
Absolutely.
You should be looking to get out of it if you possibly can, or change it.
That said, I did have, when I had people working for me or not working for me, just in the same team, I did, and there were new hires, I had this concept that my time isn't cheap either. Yeah. So if I'm going to explain something to you, I gave them all a blue book. So everybody in the facility knew, everybody was walking around with the blue book or learning stuff. So, okay, if you didn't know, if I just explained something to you, how does DNS work? Okay, I'll show you how DNS work. Where's your blue book? Okay, I'll write down your blue book. Okay, and then I would ask them questions randomly at lunchtime. Okay, how does DNS work? and blah, 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 blah. And if they had the blue book, they could refer to the blue book. If they didn't have the blue book with them, then they had to answer. And you would get punished if you didn't know the answer to the question.
That's very good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's we all, the team I was in, we all got a copy of a book called Dr. Linux. Have you ever seen that? It's a great, great, thundering great book. I don't know whether it's still in print. Big, big, big book with lots, with many very, very thin paper pages that tries to cover everything about Linux from front to back, and tries to at least give you the starting point for a lot of stuff if you're looking to answer questions like that. Not because somebody's asked you that as you're walking down the corridor, but just because you need to know it to solve some problem or understand a thing.
No, that was more like a thing with the guys, so that they would go back and get their book and then, you know, learn the stuff. So, and some of them wouldn't have the book, and then they would know the stuff. And yeah, great. I do have a rule, though. One thing that does annoy me is somebody coming up asking the same question over and over and over again when I've explained to them. So that if somebody comes up and asks me a question and I give an answer, that's fine. If they come up the second time and ask the same question, then perhaps I haven't done a good enough job explaining it to them, whereby I will make an effort to go into detail, ensuring that they know what I'm asking. And then the third time, I really start losing interest in the person, because you're not only wasting my time, but you're just wasting everybody's time. That's not to say if somebody comes up for clarifications on the same thing, well, I've done this and on this system it worked, but on this system it didn't work. That's absolutely fine. I consider that to be a new question or an extension of what, how do I do this, or I forgot how to do this. Is also fine, or I'm locked out and I can't get to my blue book. That's also fine. But somebody just been rather lazy really does annoy me, because you're wasting somebody else's time who's probably costing the company more than you are. You know what I mean?
Oh yes, oh yes, yes. It's I used to working in a university is different, of course, but we used to run a help desk, which was manned by us lot, and we were on a rota.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so you certainly learned how to deal with all manner of different queries and problems. And sometimes they were the same person and asking the same question, and you might lose your patience a little bit with that type of thing.
Sorry, on a complete and utter tangent here. Sorry, everybody who's listening to this, but I can't help but tell this story. When I was on help desk, we had everybody in the department was on the help desk, including the help desk manager, and she was cycled into the rota, and I used to love being on the week after her, because you know, if somebody rang up, I'm some middle manager somewhere, and I don't know how to change the printer and the toner cartridge, so I'm ringing you out of office hours, blah 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 blah. Well, she would go ballistic. What are you doing? Wasting my people's time calling this. Hold on, I'm going to put on your manager. Stay there. Ben calls their manager at home on their mobile phone and have them justify why they're wasting everybody's time. Brilliant. Used to love that.
Yes, yes.
Anyway.
That sounds like some good anecdotes there. You should be making a show of it, Ken.
Yeah, too late now. I've wasted it. Completely wasted it, Dave. Okay, Brenda J. Butler says, people who waste my time by trying to find the answer for me. I totally agree. And another thing that is annoying is when you ask a question and the person doesn't know the answer, but either tells you a bunch of generalities that anyone would know, or tries to find out the answer while you're standing there. Then you go back to your desk, look yourself. What I would like is a quick answer, but if it's a I don't know, or even I don't know off the top of my head, they could throw in some keywords into a search if they think it might help.
Yeah, fair enough. So Quick Answers, which is a good handle, says, I failed to do this and I'm sorry. Brenda, that is annoying. What I've tried to remember is to do is to ask in the format of, don't spend time on this, but do you know off the top of your head? But recently I asked someone a question I'd already spent a lot of time researching, and it appears that I couldn't do what I wanted to do. But as I said, if I think something should be possible, I think this is DODD dummy, actually didn't put his name in. If I think a thing should be possible, I won't let a no remain. So
and remain so, and we'll ask again every few months. Even if it's a no now, things change quickly. Anyway, I forgot to add off the top of your head, and I'm afraid 1 to 2 hours might have been spent searching for me to return the first bit of text, my research being revealed. I feel so bad about that slip of the tongue.
Yeah.
I think it was DDD dummy, actually. Yeah.
No, I get that. Well, sometimes I get asked a question that's actually really interesting, and you go, crikey, I don't know the answer to that. It seems bloody obvious. And then I usually end up looking for hours and then asking you on Telegram.
yeah, I know. I used to try and be the person that the last point of questioning
last
when I was
resort,
working.
Yeah,
last line of resort. So I'd say, if you're really stuck, come and ask, and I'll see, I might have an answer. And I used to get all the regular expression questions. So
I still do.
Nothing has changed. Yeah, anyway, I enjoyed it.
Okay, sorry, I felt that whole story didn't add anything to this conversation, but okay, I thought it was nice. Anyway, asking questions, yeah. Maybe it's a cultural thing. Some cultures do not want, you know, feel small for not asking questions.
But oh, the whole losing face business is definitely a thing, but it's there's the Confucian thing about that that I've forgotten just for the moment, but I'm sure I've trotted it out before. Something about he who asks a question may look a fool for a moment, but he who fails to ask that question is a fool forever. Something along those lines. And I think that's a very good, very good point.
Yeah, I've always encouraged the kids to go, to ask questions and go, I don't know that, but it's a really good question and I'm going to go find out for you. Or then... Unfortunately, that triggered a whole series of them coming up with really, really, really difficult questions that I spent weeks trying to figure out. And then you go, here's the answer. Yeah, I know, we saw it on the BBC, you know, and CBeebies did a program. Thank you very much.
We can read Wikipedia too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, that was a great show. Great show for, and you wouldn't have thought that would have been something that would trigger a lot of interesting conversation.
No, I think it's things a lot of people had experience of, so it's an excellent thing to be talking about. I'm sure there's more mileage in that too.
Mm-hmm. The next show, John Culp refurbishes a fan. I had never seen one of these, never heard of one of these. It is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Yeah, well, ditto here. I've never heard of one either. And isn't it great? What a wonderful design.
You got to see his Flickr photographs, guys. Absolutely gorgeous. And he restored it perfectly. Well, I mean, not perfectly, but sorry, John, you didn't replace all the lead, but it looks gorgeous.
It does. It looks really excellent. Yeah, cool thing. I was puzzling over, when I first saw it, why is it a hassock fan? Because hassock means things like a cushion or a small seat or something like that. Well, I don't know whether you're actually supposed to sit on it, but it looks like a thing you would sit on. It's probably unwise to do so, but I think it's because it looks like a small stool that it's called a hassock fan.
Yep.
But, yeah.
Different times though, Dave.
Oh, aye. No, definitely, yes.
The only disadvantage it would be the cable dangling across the floor, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. See, maybe in those days, because when I was a kid, it was common for people to do their ironing in the living room or the front room or something, and they connect their iron to the light socket.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
which is a deadly thing to do, but you could imagine one of these running off a light socket.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
our fridge at home ran for years off an audio cable, or no, a telephone cable. Telephone wire cable. Oh my God. And as far as I know, it could still be like that. Anyway, fingers crossed. Excellent. Loved this. Really enjoyed this show. The eyes have it, Dave. My history with vision issues and how I have dealt with them. How is this man alive, is my question.
What a story. Yeah.
Hoka, he has... I don't know. He must have a filing cabinet all to himself in his doctor's office. Honest to God.
Yeah. Quite a tale. It's. I wasn't expecting him to give us so much information about his own health, but I think it's an excellent thing to do.
Oh,
I very much admire it.
Sorry, that came across wrong. That's a bit like a plus one to when somebody posts something on, I've been to a funeral, plus one. Yeah, no, that's not what I meant. Thank you for sharing us what I meant.
And I think it requires a certain amount of courage, too. I don't know if maybe courage is strong, but I think it does. So thank you very much for having done that.
And I posted before on the day I posted the show. I see what you did there. See? Vision eyes, get it?
yes.
Okay.
So yes, Clinton Roy says, yowzers. That's Australian expression. Yikes, I really don't have much to say. I used to run away as a kid to get treats from the store next door. No trains nearby though. And the story of little...
No, guys, if you haven't heard this episode, go on and listen to it. It's working.
Yeah. It's quite amazing.
And speaking of somebody who has had their own special medical journey, an interview with Dan Lynch, absolutely thrilled to see him back in the community again.
Yeah, I know that I was delighted to see that this was coming up. I just listened to it today, actually. And he sounds so much healthier than he was. And he sounds to be very energetic and et cetera. So he's had a hell of a time of it, but he seems to be well on the mend. He's an organizer of this Liverpool Makefest, which seems to be quite a thing to be involved with.
He's just one of these guys who is there, you know. Tony as well, you know. Tony, Dan, and Les Pounder, you know, just pillars of the community, basically. Yeah, I've heard that word. They're pillars of the community, but these guys are a pillar of the community.
Oh yes. Yeah, it's good to hear. Good to hear from them.
Very much. Okay, the last one for this month. Processing. Yes, thank you, Klaatu. I spent literally a half an hour trying to figure out what the hell was gone wrong with the upload, only to find out that he did it on purpose.
That was a bit I liked the best.
And they're going, what's wrong with this thing? Why is it still processing? I've deleted the show. There's no reservation. Hold on, let me check the log files. I can't find anything in the log files. Hold on. Hold on. The name is processing. Right. Very hilarious.
I saw this coming through from the notes point of view, so I wasn't completely surprised, though I did do a double take. But the fact that he said he'd done that in order to wind us up, I thought was wonderful. It made me laugh a lot.
Yeah, and I fell for it. But I would like to thank Klaatu for his excellent show notes. He's really making a massive effort to improve the quality of his show notes to the point where they're now approaching yours.
Oh, absolutely, yes. One of the things about the linuxlink.com site doing reviews of podcasts was they made a great emphasis on show notes.
Yeah.
It was one of the criteria for judging or reviewing or whatever, scoring perhaps. And you won't be surprised to know I agree with that.
Yeah, and also the podcast awards use that as a criteria as well. Basically, everybody uses the show notes as a criteria because the majority of people don't listen to shows via the RSS feed. Apparently, that is not a thing anymore. And they read the show notes and then decide to listen to the show based on
it. Yeah, yeah.
Even so, from an accessibility point of view, is why I like it so much, is that, you know, even if you're have hearing issues, you can still follow on with HPR because you've taken the time to at least boil down the essence of what you're talking about in the show. So we're not excluding people. Yeah.
Yeah, good show. I enjoyed this. I'd come across processing, as I would say, years ago on a bookstore. You know, there were books on it in the bookshops, and I looked at it and thought, oh yeah, I don't think I'll be using that for a while. Never have, but this put it in a different light. It looks quite interesting.
Yeah, it seemed pretty cool. The portability to an application on your phone seemed like a nice touch if you're into that.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, Ski. I think there's a comment.
There is a comment. Yes, shall I do that one? It's from Be Easy. Says, seems like a great teaching tool. Thanks for this episode. I've heard of processing, but never knew what it was or how it would be useful. I'll probably turn to this after Scratch for my kids.
Cool. Yeah. Java. doesn't really float my boat, I must say. But there you go. That's just my.
This is something of a subset of it, though, I think. So.
Yeah, it seems so, more Arduino-y to me.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's essentially C, or is it C++ that it's based on? So, yeah, it's a reasonable. It's a C-like type of language. So, you know, that's a seems a reasonable place to be working from.
Okay. So that brings us to the end of shows, but the show isn't over. See what I did there, Dave? Now we do comments that were submitted on shows older than this month's shows. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope so.
So episode 2519, The Remora Builds a Character in the Edge of the Empire. And the comment was from Klaatu. Great walkthrough. Thanks for the episode. I've heard of Edge of the Empire, but have never played. I really like your character build process, and this was a nice overview of how a character's work in a system. Thanks, I think, exclamation mark.
Cool. So the next one was 2558, to comment on my show, Battling with English, and somebody who calls himself the Snitch says, "The jig is up, Dave." I wonder who that could be. Points to a link to a comic talking about what was it again? It was noun. I've forgotten. I did read the thing. It was nouns. The transmogrification of nouns.
Yeah.
Anyway, I replied to that. Ha ha! Isn't that like that line from that Star Trek Wars film? Leverage the Force, Luke. No, I'm wrong. That's a verbification, I think. I point to how the verbification of leverage is really, really stupid. Oh, sorry, that's just one of my rabbit holes. I should probably do a show on this.
Yes, and you probably will. Anyways, comment on Tony Hughes' show, Ubuntu Mate. There was a comment by JWP. JWP had commented about he's not using Mate at the moment. Tony says, great little update. Thanks, JWP. I'm glad at least one listener found it useful. Having been using it for a couple of months now, I can say I'm very impressed and have found a workaround for the USB utilities I use in Mint. I have installed Mint 19 beta into VirtualBox, and it seems very good. And once the stable release is out, I will still be my go-to distro for installing for family and friends who are not Linux gurus. Ubuntu Mate will probably remain on my main box until the next LTS cycle, as I try to keep that as stable as possible and change OS on it as infrequently as I can get away with. Wise words, indeed.
Indeed. So the next one is show 2583, Random Rant by The Dude. And Randy Nose, aka The Nose 100, comments on The Juiced Penguin and says, "John, how weird that I pick a random podcast out of the lineup to listen to and find this one on Feedly. I didn't even see The Juiced Penguin in the title this morning when I started listening. Heck, it's not even something that I think about these days. The Juiced Penguin was an idea that I had and knew that I couldn't pull it off alone. The late, great Lord D assisted me with the original effort. It took a lot of time to find the music, and Klaatu assisted with offering up some content for it also. I found that it was really time-consuming, and Terry F took over for a period of time until it fizzled out. The main idea that I had was to get more OGG content out there to help expand the awareness of the OGG format due to restrictions of the MP3 format, and that many MP3 players didn't support it. Today, most people are listening to content on computers or Android devices. Most are able to listen to the OGG format if they wish. If my old memory serves me right, even Mark Shuttleworth had stopped worrying about the MP3 format being a real problem, even though it's still a closed file format. Granted, it's not open, but the threat of being sued doesn't seem likely after nothing happening after all of this time. For what it's worth, when I am online, I'm easily found over on G+, aka randynose.com. Also over on mastodon.rocks as randynose. Thanks for reminding me some good times years ago. All hail the Juiced Penguin."
Yeah, cool. And Tlaki says, MP3 is not a real problem. The Fraunhofer Institute US patent on MP3 have expired. So the MP3 format is no longer problematic in connection with free software. The only reason not to use MP3 these days are because it's decades behind in codec evolution. For example, Opus is strictly better in every aspect. And in envelope evolution, Matroska has a better metadata and streaming.
Cool.
That is that for that, I think, Dave. Agree?
Now, it is. Brings us that's us, yes.
Mailing list discussions. Dun, dun, dun. Oh, yeah, the Open Networking Summit. We will be official press at the Open Network. And I need to reserve some slots week after for those.
Yeah. That looks like fun. So, yeah, I hadn't quite twigged that it was in September. I don't know why I thought it was. Obviously didn't read this with my brain switched on. But, that's going to be something the most interesting, I'm sure.
And Sigplug commented that the explicit tag was on an episode we fixed. Probably doesn't in the audio, but there you go.
That's an issue, actually, isn't it? It never occurred to me until it was too late that we should have gone and fixed it there as well. But Sorry to all concerned, but if we ever have to
speak about the site, well, actually, I might leave that. This show is going on long enough. I might leave it to next month because they're going to be talking about Sparkle next, and that can be thinking about. And actually, people can be thinking about that in the meantime. Because we have this issue, the single point of failure for entry to HPR is the HPR website. We can easily publish to multiple locations. That's not really. But how do we get in shows and how do we give hosts the ability to edit their show notes and all that stuff? And I was thinking we could do it with Git. And, you know, we have a GitHub, not GitHub, but
GitLab.
That's the money, GitLab on HPR. So therefore, people could create their own accounts there, which you've got emails and their own shared keys, and then, you know, that's the authentication out of the way. And also the whole anonymization will be out of the way because we don't know if you're a cat or a real person. It doesn't really matter to us, so long as you're the same entity that created it. You could then go in, we could then assign, I guess, privileges to hosts to edit their own hosts file. If they created a show, then theoretically you could give them some sort of permissions. So I'm not enough of an expert on Git to be able to define how all this will work, but for the Git experts out there and Tlaki, perhaps, could you all think about how you would do that on GitLab or some sort of Git whereby people could manage their own episodes? I don't know what sort of pull request checks we would need to prevent spam and all the rest of it. But other than that, that's kind of where I was thinking. Because then if it's in Git, we can pull it down and then publish it as static HTML files around the place. What do you reckon, Dave?
Yeah, that sounds like there's some possibilities there. I was just listening to the SparkleShare episode today, actually, and for which thank you to Klaatu for what seemed like a really clear explanation of it. Didn't have a lot of time to concentrate on it, but so it seems worth digging into to see whether there would be possibilities there, which we can leave till next week to discuss. And,
the advantage of this is that it would be distributed and that, you know, somebody could do a Git pull every day and then they have all the information they need and then pull down from archive.org. Theoretically, then we're distributed. And that's kind of the goal that we want. And that could be the source, basically, is, you know, Git is the source. We could wrap something around it that would do the database-y stuff, which could be taken from Git. I don't know how to do this. I'm just leaving it open to people listening. That's kind of where we're going.
Given that SparkleShare is dependent on the Git hook stuff, then how much else could be?
I don't think SparkleShare is really necessary because, you know, we can put in Git hooks that we can run processing on the thingy and we can SCP it or rsync it or create a torrent file or however we choose to distribute it. So, but just the discussion about SparkleShare had me thinking about this, that might be a way to do it, yeah.
That was what I meant too, that there's lessons to be learned from how that works in, and extrapolated into some future HPR implementation.
Yeah. If you have thoughts, send them in. That would be great. I'll do it on the mailing list or comment on this episode. Well, there you go. Have we anything else on any other business?
You wanted to mention the CMS, and I was going to mention the tags project. So
you mentioned the tags because basically the CMS, that's what I wanted to talk about. I just wanted to rid of the CMS and basically do it on GitHub or somewhere.
Yeah, okay. So just to say thank you to BJB for sending in a couple of tag updates to two shows in the past month. I haven't had a chance to do any myself. I keep meaning to and not managing to get to it. But we're slowly moving forward with that project.
And I have a half-written PHP page for people to submit their updates, but I haven't even told you about that. So, lucky I didn't mention it there, or you'd be holding me to that.
Making notes here.
I'm afraid of that. Okie dokie. Anything
that's
else?
I think that's it.
Right. With that, we will thank everybody for listening. If you made it this far, you're a real believer in the project. And tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public Radio. Oh, join us now and share the software. You'll be free, hacker. You'll be free.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.